comments.
So, Buddha's psychology was based on breaking down our experience into the components. Every experience, he said, is comprised of five different, sometimes overlapping, but somewhat independent components. Every experience, every moment, our reality, what we're experiencing, what we our subjective what's occurring in our minds is broken down into five categories. The first is that right now we've all got body sensations. We've all got the sense of being in a breathing body. We often lose touch of it, but at any given moment or any given situation, that can flare up and grab our attention. A pain, the sense of the breath, the sense of hunger arising, or what have you. There's just the embodied state of the sensations that occur when you have a body. The second is, of course, we've got senses, sense consciousness. We've got sight and hearing, tactility, smell, etc. So we make contact with things through our senses. This is pretty, I think, easy to understand. The third, once we make contact with things, the Buddha said that there then arises what he called vedana, and what clinical psychologists and neuroscientists call somatic markers. And what that means is the body expresses emotions of like and don't like whenever we make contact with things. We're walking along, we see something, or something that has in the past been very difficult or scary, or somebody that we're frightened of, and the body first has this shock, this contraction. Maybe the stomach gets tight, or perhaps a very fearful thought arises and our jaw starts locking, or our shoulders get tight. These are what's known as embodied emotions. Feelings, gut feelings. And the Buddha was very ahead of his time in that he maintained, like present-day neuroscientists, that before we think, we already have these gut feelings that frame or filter our perceptions and lean us towards liking or disliking. And it's useful that we have vedana or gut feelings, because without them, making any decision in life would be nearly, well, it'd be a fucking pain in the neck. I'll give you an example. If somebody's asking you which color shirt or pants or dress you want to wear, and they're holding up two, you know, one's red and one's blue, I don't know, whatever the fuck. They're holding up two nearly identical things, and you have to decide. If you go back and forth deciding, or you're asked what you'd like to order for dinner, or somebody asks you which movie you want to see, if you go back and forth in your mind listing all the reasons why you prefer a red shirt over a blue, or why blue's better, you'll never make a decision, because there is really no underlying reason why you should choose so many of the things we choose. So we just follow our gut, and our gut says, oh, well, I don't like red. A really sort of bold color. I really like red. It's in, that's the new look, I don't know, whatever. And so the gut, we follow our gut. This is what's known as vedana. We're following our gut feelings. So that's before consciousness. It follows a neural pathway that's straight from the amygdala to the reward systems of the brain. It doesn't go through the whole temporal lobe thing, and so it's fast. It's very fast neural system. So it's already in place before we even think. We already have an underlying felt attitude. Oof, I like this. Well, that's, I got that wrong. I don't like this. I can't even get that right. Oof, I don't like this, or ooh, I... Whatever. Okay, you get the idea. There's a felt underlying thing. And then there's, of course, thoughts, sankharas, which are just all the commentary we add, the things that we say, just our underlying narratives that we live in. And then, but there's a fifth that a lot of people find difficult to grasp, and is actually, I think, when we understand it, pretty rewarding. The fifth component of all of our experience is called perceptions. And the Buddha said that perceptions play a very important role in our suffering. Why we suffer, why we're stressed out, what is causing the cycle of stress that we live in. So what are perceptions? Perceptions are the little labels that we affix to people and things as a sort of mental shortcut so that we don't have to go through a whole lot of thinking again about whether we like this person or we don't like this person, whether we like this beach or this kind of food or whatever. We have these quick perceptions. This thing's good, this thing's bad, this thing's useful, that thing's not useful, this person's funny, that person's intelligent, this person's kind of dull, not liking them. This person, when we're new at a job, you're being introduced to 20, 30 people you've never met before in your life, and it's overwhelming. And what we are often doing is first we're having gut reactions to the way they look at us when each person is introduced. Hi, this is Bill. Say hello to Bill in accounting. And you're like, oh, accounting? But Bill looks kind of friendly. He's kind of smiling at me. So I'm gonna say, okay, I'm going to relax. And then there's the thought, oh, Bill's kind of friendly with me. And then there's the, we filter Bill and we put him in the characterization of Bill's friendly. Until proven otherwise. It's funny, in life we can pretty much add perceptions to experiences very quickly. Just on one meeting with somebody who might be in having a bad day, an off day, if they're short with us, we can immediately affix, you know, asshole, pain in that, not helpful, avoid, whatever. There's a perception we add. So very often, sana, or perceptions, come directly after our first thoughts, or sometimes they just happen immediately after the gut feelings. Our gut reaction is, ugh, I don't like the way that person's looking. Reminds me of my dad when my dad was angry. Not a nice person, a boy. So this is the perceptual shorthand that we add so that we don't have to go around through life redeciding whether we like broccoli or not, whether we like this person or not, because life is filled with so many different decisions, so many different people, that the mind decides that the quickest way to make all the decisions that we have to is to trust our gut feelings and to trust our perceptions, and to not, as often as possible, even go to thought. Thought we save to worrying about what's going to happen to me in the future. Oh my God, am I going to be able to pay the rent? But perceptions are like, oh, should I deal with this person? Do I like this person? Am I friendly with this person? Do I avoid this person? Etc. Do I avoid this thing? Ooh, do I like this restaurant? No, I ate there once. It was terrible. It must be a terrible place. I'm never going to go there again. Don't even suggest it. I want to go to this restaurant. So we have these perceptual shorthands. So why is perceptions part of the process that causes us stress and suffering? The first is that perceptions ingrain or justify our gut feelings. And gut feelings, while they often can be correct, gut feelings can also often be very, very incorrect. For example, we might have a bad experience one day in a restaurant that has nothing to do with the restaurant, but we'll never go again to that restaurant, or we might have a bad experience while we're listening to Tom Waits, so we'll never listen to Tom Waits again, or we'll never listen to Tool again, or we'll never listen to whatever. When our dad was angry, he had a specific expression, and whenever we see anybody again with that expression or wearing that coat, like my dad's coat or whatever, or that my first grade teacher's coat, if they're wearing anything similar to my first grade teacher, they must be evil, and I'll have this physical contraction, this Vedana that says, oh shit, I'm in trouble, get away from me. You're driving along, you know, the Ramones are playing, you get in the car accident, so every time you hear the Ramones, the physical stress arises. The poor Ramones had nothing to do with your car accident. So, well, they're all dead, so they don't really care. Actually, the drummer's not dead, so I shouldn't condemn the drummer to an early death. The rest of them are gone, so... it engraves Vedana. It justifies gut feelings that are often way off the mark. Sometimes we can start avoiding things like heights or elevators or subways or whatever because we have a single bad worrying moment in it. And we have this gut reaction to the subway. Oh, I'm not going to go, I'm not taking the subway. And then we have the thought, the perceptual thought, subways are bad. I like whatever. I like buses. I don't care. Whatever happens, there's a justification. The second thing is that perceptions tend to be extremely subjective, and they concretize our extremely subjective worldviews and we tend to believe that our subjective experiences are in fact objective when they're not. For example, if you're going to a beach and you're a surfer and you got your surfboard, and I don't even know how to hold one, but I suspect that this is how you do it. Probably not. Maybe like this. All right, so you're holding your surfboard. Somewhere you're holding it, and obviously it's a very light board. And the waves are huge. And so you see these huge waves and you decide, oh, this beach is great. I love this beach. This beach is wonderful. I'm always going to go back to this beach. Whenever my friends say, which beach do you want to go to? I want to go to the Far Rockaways. That's the beach I want to go to. So, but if you're on the other hand, you're carrying a big kayak and you want to start kayaking, you see these huge waves. You go, oh, this beach is ridiculous. These waves are huge. I can't use this. I'm going to be killed. This is a terrible place. Why did you suggest the Far Rockaways? I want to go to Fort Tilden. I only know two names of two beaches, so I'm just giving you two beaches that are, in fact, right next to each other, because I can't think of any other beach names. So our subjective experience, depending upon what our agendas are in life, if we're a farmer and there's been a drought, we see a rain cloud, we're yippee. If, on the other hand, we've gone down to Texas for a vacation, we see a rain cloud, we're like, oh shit, I hate this rain cloud. So the same exact thing can elicit completely different perceptual reactions simply based on a momentary agenda, a momentary situation, something that's very passing. We go towards a subway car and somebody is blocking the subway car. And we think, oh my God, that idiot, there's so much room, why don't they move into the subway? And then we see them later on at work, and they're somebody that we work with, and they're like, oh my God, that person, I have to work with this subway blocker. I'm screwed. I'm stuck with a subway blocker in my... You should know better. That's part of being a New Yorker, is knowing not to just stand there, right? So you get the idea. We have these very sort of self-justifying, very fleeting things that can create these very lasting judgments. Interactions with people can, just based on a single interaction, them being having an off day, not having enough sleep, being hungry, being whatever, can completely just throw them off, and we can we perceptually, when we add a perception, we globalize what can be a very fleeting moment into something that will, we believe, last forever. This person was difficult with me, therefore they're always difficult, therefore I can never open myself up to them being not difficult. Or this person, I went out to dinner with them, they were very funny, therefore I expect them to be funny each time, and if I go out to dinner with them and they're not funny, there's something wrong with them. They must be sick, or I don't know, something's happened. So what we're doing is we're building up all these concretized, globalizing, sticky views that become very, very difficult to dislodge because we're very attached to our perceptions. Not only because we like the way we view the world and we believe that our worldview is not subjective, we believe that it's really based on truth, but we have all these underlying gut vedanas that are adding to the feeling that it must be right. I don't like this person. Every time they're around, my stomach gets tight. I know there's something wrong with them. So, then on top of the personal views, whether the person has been nice to us or not, then there's just the what the Buddha called ditti, or worldviews. We might self-identify as a progressive, or God forbid, a Tea Party advocate. And depending upon these views, then whatever new news thing occurs, we affix a label, good or bad. This is friendly to my worldview. This is not friendly to my worldview. I was at a wedding, which, if you know me, is just already an admission of defeat. Really, I would pretty much do anything than go to most weddings, except if there's a lot of friends I know. But I was at a wedding where I knew virtually nobody, and there was a bunch of people from the South, and I was at a table with them. I don't know how I was punished for some comment deed, and this woman was very loudly, this was at the time when Obama was running for president, and she was very loudly saying that Obama was a Muslim extremist who was not even born in this country, and that it was part of the liberal agenda to foist a, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know the story. And I asked her where she got her information from, and of course she said the only fair and objective, and which of course is Fox News, and I said, well, you know, I'm pretty certain, in fact, that Obama is not a Muslim, and he's in fact, even if it was, it wouldn't matter, but I'm pretty sure he was born in America. And she said, well, where do you get your information from? And I told her the truth, which is the first thing I read is generally the BBC. And she said, oh, commies. So the entire wing, news bureau wing of the British government is communist. And this is what our perceptual agendas do. We build up this house of cards, and if anybody threatens, you know, or questions, you know, one thing, we have so much invested in our perceptions, our perceptual agendas, that the moment anything becomes questioned, instead of even being willing to talk or investigate it, we've got all this time, energy, and stuff built up around it, and immediately we become very defensive. And I wish I could say that this was simply limited to people I've interacted with on the right. I'll say mostly it has, but there's a lot of the most shockingly reactive, unthought out, just gut-driven, habitual perceptions also come from our friends on the left, or this or that, whatever. Whatever we attach to, we tend to feel this need to defend. Because when somebody questions our perceptions, in a sense, we feel like the entire way we're making sense of the world is being challenged. You know, if I really believe that the Kinks are more important than the Beatles and the Stones, and you say, I never really cared that much for the Kinks, then I'm already, there's this physical, and then there's the, what kind of, you know, human being are you? And then the shoulders go up, and the brow, you know, and the eyes. And there's a, you know, there's stuff going on all of a sudden, and I have to, and I'm no longer willing to ask, you know, oh, well, why do you like, you know, this over that, or why do you think this way? It becomes immediately, I've got to defend my perceptions. And of course, then once we have these perceptual worldviews that we have to defend, then on top of it, it leads to actions and habits and addictions. Because the more we think this thing is good and that thing is bad, we keep on going to these few things that we think we've labeled as good. And we more and more and more avoid the things that after just one or two experiences we've decided are bad. I just don't like that Indian food. I'm sorry. I really like that Korean food. And so we just keep going again and again and again, and we start creating ruts in the brain where we can only engage in a few different things of the world that the world has to offer. We become very much trapped karmically within the perceptual agendas that we've affixed to our experiences. So perceptions have, they really entrap us, and they really can be very ensnaring. And even a single good experience with, you know, a crack pipe can lead us again to, oh, I'm under stress. The last time I was under stress, that crack pipe was pretty fucking useful. You know, going to my therapist was not as useful. I just felt bad. I just talking about my parents again, and you know, but that, you know, that whatever, that drink, that donut really solved it. That was good. It was good donut. It really solves. So we keep getting pushed towards these habits, which in turn create more and more karmic momentum. We become more and more trapped. So what's the solution? But Buddha did not teach just when it came to working with thoughts. He didn't just say, okay, stop thinking. He said when we have thoughts that are obsessive and cause stress, the way we first start working is we first start thinking thoughts that are skillful, that don't cause stress, that don't cause suffering. And it's the same with perceptions. The Buddha said, rather than trying not to label our experience or add perceptions, let's do it in a skillful way. So what's a skillful way to do perceptions? Well, the Buddha said, instead of aiming that perceptual labeling agenda out into the world so that every time when we're experiencing a new situation, we affix this person's good, that person's bad, this situation's easy, that situation's not easy, we instead label how we're responding to life as skillful or unskillful. We see, okay, when I'm in a new job and I'm going around greeting everyone, this tendency to immediately try to figure out who's on my side, who's going to be easy to deal with, who's going to be difficult, what's going to be safe, what's not going to be safe, this need to immediately categorize everything is in fact a habit that is not particularly skillful and an agenda or something that will be useful for me in the long term because I can be wrong. Or sometimes, for example, that when I'm asked to work with somebody that I've found difficult, rather than adding the thought, oh, this is a difficult person, seeing, oh, this tendency to carry the past and experiences of the past into the present and expect it to always play out that way, completely limits the way I interact with the world. Perhaps it's simply seeing the way I interact with certain food that I'm not enjoying. I'll give you an example. I once said, there's this kind of food that only is available once in a great while during the year. It's called fiddleheads. You ever seen fiddleheads? Yeah, they're like green beans that are that look like the head of a fiddle. They're like in a spiral. And I guess unless you clean them, well, they can get dirt and grit in the sort of crevices of, I'm getting to talk about fiddleheads, but it's the head of a fern, yeah. So I once had a fiddlehead salad and I got incredibly sick afterwards. And then every time I saw them for a while, I would have this, physical queasiness, followed by the thought, fiddleheads are bad. And then if you ever asked me, I'd have to come up with this immediate justification of why this absurd one single experience, was true. So I'd have to, oh, it's proven. it's just evil, whatever, And so it took a while for me to, get out the courage. And the way I did it was, instead of just saying, okay, here's fiddleheads, I'm going to not add that perception, I'm going to instead have the perception, okay, I've only experienced this once. Maybe I can open up to the idea that things can have different experiences with them. Maybe I can add the perception, oh, this is a vegetable. It could be actually good. I like a lot of different vegetables. Or, oh, this is a different place I'm eating it. I like this place. I can open up to this. So instead, I'm consciously using perceptions as my aid to open up to new experiences rather than to close off and to simply agree with everything I've decided before. Consciously working against, closing off, consciously using my ability to perceive things in a constructive way. I'll give you an example. The Buddha said four of the most skillful perceptions are the Brahma Viharas, which are wishing, goodwill, compassion, appreciation of people's successes, and balance. So how would we do that? We meet somebody who in the past has been very difficult, and we decide they're a Hare Krishna. And in the past, they've rung their Hare Krishna bells outside, and I'm meeting this Hare Krishna again. And so how do I open up to the jingle bells? Well, the first is I say to myself, okay, this person deserves to find true peace and happiness within, just like I do. So I wish this person and their incessant ringing of peace. May they find peace. And then I reflect on compassion, which is that this person, just like I have, at one point or another has suffered. Everybody has gone through rejection. Everybody's experienced loss and grief and sadness. Even the person that I find the most skillful person in the world has experienced loss and death and rejection and abandonment. So we're all worthy of feeling, of sending out compassion towards. And everybody, even the most unskillful person in the world, has at one point or another done skillful things. I might not have seen them, but I'm pretty certain that even Stalin and Hitler at one point, made a birthday card for their mother or whatever. At one point. Even if we find it difficult to send out thoughts of appreciation, we can at the very least send out thoughts of wishing people goodwill, which is wishing that they'll find true peace within so that they won't continue to act unskillfully. That's a cultivated perception. Instead of falling back into, oh, this person is shitty, or oh, this situation is shitty, or oh, this movie, I can't stand, oh, what's his name? Who's the guy in The Matrix?
Keanu Reeves.
All right. Oh my God, it's a movie with Keanu Reeves. Can I really sit through this? And I instead open up and I send thoughts of goodwill to myself and to the people I'm around, and I open up to the possibility this might be different. Eventually, over time, we can catch perceptions before they even occur. And the way we do this is when that gut feeling arises in the body, when we notice that aversion is occurring, there's contraction, the shoulders are going up, the jaw is locking, the brow is getting tighter, we're getting our emotional response. The Buddha said before we allow it to go any further, we can relax, breathe into the areas where we hold our embodied emotions, release them. And the point of this is that rather than engraving a difficult experience as into the rest of our lives, rather than having one interaction become dominating from that point on, instead, if we can become peaceful and at ease with whatever we're experiencing, we then don't have to add these limiting perceptions. And then we can be free in the future over a much longer period of time to really investigate whether things are useful or not useful, helpful or not helpful. At that point, once you've had really a lot of experience and we've really seen that something is not useful, then it's fine to add those perceptual habits. When we've really seen that something's dangerous or somebody is really consistently unskillful, then it's fine. But these are perceptions that we're bringing about by real lived experience, not by judgments or jumping to conclusions that might very well lead us in the wrong direction. So that's an overview of the Buddha's teachings on sanna, or perceptions, and why they're important and how to work with them. So I thank you for listening. And now is your chance to ask any questions about anything that has to do with the spiritual path or Buddhism or your practice. So thank you for listening.